Just like you, we're working hard to boost our direct booking strategy and reduce our dependence on Airbnb. But we were a little bit nervous about how we would verify guests who book directly with us. That's why we've started using Know Your Guest by Superhog.
Know Your Guest introduces guest screening seamlessly into our reservation process, allowing us to authenticate guest details in real time across multiple databases. This prevents fraud and unwanted parties. Talk about incredible peace of mind.
Plus, Superhog offers a damage waiver program to cover damages efficiently. You can leverage their damage protection plan that offers unmatched short-term rental protection up to $5 million for all verified bookings.
With Know Your Guest by Superhog, we're scaling our direct bookings without all the worry. Just click the link in our show notes and book your free Superhog demo today. You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation
and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, we have welcomed thousands of guests from over 30 countries, earning us over $1 million and garnering us thousands of five-star reviews.
We love sharing creative ways for your listing to stand out, serve your guests, and be profitable. Each episode, we will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry.
Or we will share our stories of our own experiences so you can implement actual improvements to your rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Before we dive into the content, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hey, new hosts. Are you swimming in a sea of questions like, how do I deter parties? How many towels should I have and where should I get them? What sheet should I use? What smart lock is best? What are the best practices when listing on Airbnb? How do I write a good title and description? Or maybe you don't even have your first property yet and you're wondering where to find it and how to know if it's a good deal. Well, we've been working on a solution to help new hosts get all their questions answered for over a year now, and we're finally proud and ready to share with you Thanks for Visiting's Hosting Handbook. It is the ultimate step-by-step digital resource guide for new hosts. The Hosting Handbook includes searchable videos and resources specifically tailored for you, the new host. Have a question about how to price your property? Use the Hosting Handbook's search functionality and type in pricing and boom. Videos and resources all about pricing your property will populate. Want to know what to include in your short-term rental kitchen? Just type in kitchen. Videos of Annette and me in an actual running short-term rental kitchen will appear, walking you through all the do's and don'ts we've learned over our 10 plus years of hosting. We've been stockpiling host questions for years, including what to do when a guest asks you challenging questions about discounts and pricing and so much more. Get all the videos, downloads, and resources you need to fast track yourself from new host to super host. Go to thanksforvisiting.com/handbook. That's thanksforvisiting.com/handbook. Get the ultimate blueprint for hosting today. Hello, welcome back for another great episode. My name is Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are
Thanks for visiting. Let's start this episode like we do every week, and that is sharing one of you, our incredible listeners, who's using our hashtag #STRShareSunday. Annette, who are we sharing this week?
This week we are sharing @TheGoodHostCo. Again, that's The Good Host Co. That's a good name, Hostco. No, I'm loving this name. This is a very disruptive Instagram page. And I'm going to tell you, I have not seen this done before. And at first, I didn't know how I felt about it, but now I actually like it. She has basically put together 9 grids to be a full photo of the property, exterior and or interior. I don't know if you do it throughout your whole feed, but I think it's interesting to disrupt it every now and then with like a maybe hero image of your property. But check it out. You'd obviously have to be thoughtful in the way that you post to make sure that it's lining up and you have the exact photos displayed. But it was interesting. And Jamie is a star, went into her profile. She is hosting in multiple locations. And I like that, again, it's The Good Host Co. And she just has her separate cities, her separate properties in her highlights. So I know a lot of hosts want to have a lot of different Instagram handles for all their properties. And I like that she's making it succinct and just showing all of them underneath the one. So well done, Jamie. Era, I love when we get to meet our guests in person.
Yeah, we did. So we connected with today's guest, Isaac French, on LinkedIn. I think, Annette, you were following him for some time because his story was all the rage and continues to be. He built a experiential, he calls it a micro resort, in 2022. And then he sold it, what do you say, 8 months ago at this point?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
So at the end of 2023-ish, mid to end 2023.
Yep.
So very quick launch, build, and exit, but it was very successful for Isaac. We don't want to give away all the details, but we also got to meet Isaac when we went to the IMN short-term rental conference this summer. And we actually sat in, IMN did this really cool thing in it, which we should maybe do something like that for our next conference, where you got to sit in a room with someone who was leading a conversation about a specific topic and then ask them whatever questions you wanted. So instead of being on a stage with, you know, maybe 100 people around you, you are in a small workshop type room with maybe 15, 20 people around you. So you could have more of a casual conversation with this person. And so Isaac was saying so many really cool things about building this experiential resort in Texas, what he learned, what went well, what didn't, what was it like to sell it so fast. And I'm excited for this conversation today that his tip about landscape is one of my favorites. What was your favorite takeaway in it?
That people crave experience. It's not that that's like a new thing, but just being reminded of it over and over again is what type of experience are you offering your guest?
And we're not going to lie, Annette and I obviously did more than put our toe in the water. We bought a lot of land and we're going to do a resort ourselves. And it's a completely new adventure for us. And so we have a lot of questions that we have for Isaac that we have for our own property. And we're excited for him to help us here on the episode today. Isaac, welcome to the show.
Sarah and Annette, thank you so much for having me. I'm pumped to be here.
Yeah, so we're spoiled because we follow you on LinkedIn. We actually got to sit on in a very intimate kind of like workshop with you at IMN this summer. That was a treat, but our audience may not know you and your story. So will you please take us back to pre-awesome hosting days, pre-resort days, and tell us how you got into this industry?
You bet. So I did not come from a hospitality background or real estate, really, but I did grow up in a very industrious family, 9 siblings. We were homeschooled, grew up on a farm. So we had like chores and, you know, tree forts and trails and lemonade stands and just a wonderful childhood, very entrepreneurial, actually. And in high school, my dad actually was a plumber, but then he became a general contractor. And I started working for him when I was 14, 15 during summers. And sort of like from the ground up as a general laborer, learned the trades in construction, which was super valuable. I learned down the road. And so I spent 6 years eventually running projects, but again, working my way up. And alongside that, also learned accounting, bookkeeping, and also, which you don't usually see accounting, bookkeeping mixed with art, but I've always been very artistic. My grandmother gave us art lessons when we were all kids. And actually wanted to be an architect when I was younger, but then couldn't quite bring myself to the discipline of, you know, 4+ years of school. So long story short, 3 years ago, I was 24 years old. I had about $20,000 of savings. I was self-employed as a bookkeeper, but I did have, you know, a few years of construction under my belt. And I had this dream, and it's really hard to pinpoint where it came from, but essentially the dream was simple. Build a small, charming village of Nordic-inspired cabins nestled around a lake right here in the heart of Texas. Something that was totally unique for Texas. Something that didn't exist. It was something that would sort of feel like you were going to a different world. And so I started looking for property because I knew finding the right place was going to be key. And anecdotally, I had a few friends that were in Airbnbs in the Waco market, and all of them told me, don't get in to Airbnbs. There's way too much oversaturation. You know, we've had hundreds and hundreds of new units come online in the last few years. And I kept trying to tell them, look, guys, I'm going to create something that is totally distinctive, that will not compete. Even it's going to bring a new lane of traffic to Waco. It's going to be a destination. And they didn't, most of them didn't get it. But one morning while scrolling Zillow, I stumbled across this 5-acre piece of property. And it was $133,000. It was about 7 minutes down the road from where I lived. I'd driven past this place 100+ times and never thought anything of it because it was just a jungle. All you could see was you know, like bramble and trees. But I saw in one of the listing photos, a drone photo, and there was this little muddy cow pond right in the middle of the property. And I was like, that looks really interesting. Plus, it's right down the road for me. So I called up the listing agent. An hour later, I was on site. And I kid you not, when I walked on the place for the first time, I got like chills. I just knew whatever it was. I mean, I saw this little muddy cow pond. I saw these huge live oak trees, which were maybe the biggest deciding factor, these gentle rolling hills. And yes, there was tons of like scrubby, swampy brush, but I could just see like this perfect hidden gem underneath all of it, a place to realize that dream that I'd had. And the land was just speaking to me, build here. I know that sounds corny, but that's literally what my experience was. And so really very less analytically and much more just following my heart, I was like, this is the place and we're going to build a vision that works for this property. And so I put in an offer that day and we were accepted, a cash offer to close in 30 days. And I was like, well, now I got to figure out how to get some money. Again, I had like $20,000. So I started calling up family members, friends, basically anyone I knew who I thought had some money that would potentially support this. And my hope was that I could borrow like via a hard money loan, high interest rate, short term, borrow enough money to, in addition to a construction loan, get a project completed, then refinance it at a much higher valuation. My family members liked the idea a little too much and they were like, okay, we're going to loan you a little bit of money, but we need equity. So we ended up going into business together, which was great. I had spent, again, years working together with the family. And yeah, so fast forward 10 and a half months from that first day I ever walked on the property, we opened the doors to Live Oak Lake, which is a 7-unit micro resort. It's these, you know, 500 square foot Scandinavian cabins all nestled around this beautiful lake, which we totally redid, dug out. You know, totally enhanced the landscape and really created, again, that immersive transportive environment. We created this vibe, really, that it's the culmination of thousands and thousands of these little tiny details. And when I get fixated on something, I go all in. And that's what that year was. I mean, it was a crazy year. I was working 80 plus hour weeks, you know, running the project. Of course, we got a construction loan through a local bank after being told no a bunch. There were roadblocks and, you know, pitfalls at every turn, but it was a team effort. I had amazing friends, amazing family, and we got the project over the finish line. It was a crazy year though, because in order to do it, we went so far over budget. I just wasn't willing to compromise on all these little details that I actually built a $750,000 spec home 5 minutes down the road in 4.5 months, overlapping that project. And because the market was really great in Texas. And sure enough, I made about $200,000 on that, was able to sell it like 5 months after building it or after starting it while it was still in construction, rolled all the profit straight into the Live Oak Lake project because I had to. I mean, it was every penny we could scramble together. But yeah, we opened January 15th, 2022. And one other crazy part of that year was I actually, about 2/3 of the way through the project, broke my pelvis. I had jumped into one of the cabins one day to help out one of the contractors who was installing a spiral staircase and climbed up on a ladder to hold something for him. Well, the ladder fell out from underneath me and I fell about 7 feet onto the concrete and was just kind of shocked initially, but all of a sudden realized I couldn't really move. And breaking your pelvis is a much bigger deal than I ever thought it was. So I found myself from, you know, going 80 miles per hour in every sense in life to laying flat out on a hospital bed for a week with multiple surgeries. And honestly, looking back, I'm thankful for it because you have to slow down. There are times, there are seasons where you have to like give everything, but then you also can never get so far ahead of yourself like that you're forgetting the most important things, which for me are faith and family and my friends. And having that opportunity actually allowed my church community and my family and people to pitch in a way that I'm such a micromanager, I probably wouldn't have just allowed it because I'm so like OCD about all the details, but it was a wonderful experience. Actually, I was on crutches for about 3 months, but they stepped up in a big way and we got the project done. So we opened January, 2022. 2 weeks later, one morning, you know, it's the phenomenal launch. We've got wonderful reviews coming in on Airbnb. Lots of folks are coming and experiencing it. It's so rewarding to finally like be able to take a breath. And I wake up one morning and my entire Airbnb account is grayed out. And there's this little red triangle, I'll never forget. It's tattooed into my mind that says suspended on all listings, my entire account. no warning, no explanation. And that's every host's nightmare. I had heard about this, but I never actually thought, obviously, like, if nothing else, I would at least get some kind of a warning. I tried calling customer support. It was not very supportive. And it was so, you know, like a punch in the gut, like I can't even begin to articulate. Again, I'm 24 years old. I've spent every penny. I've spent a bunch of other people's money. I've spent over $2 million building this project. And we're totally, our business is ground to a halt. That ended up being the biggest blessing of the entire journey because it forced me to think outside the box with direct bookings. Well, I got on the phone with a travel influencer after like just trying to like Google and talk to friends. I didn't know anything about Instagram myself, but figure out like, what do I do to get eyeballs on Instagram? And this person told me you should partner with a travel influencer and do a giveaway. So sure enough, I spent $900 for that first giveaway. And we got around $42,000 of direct bookings in 7 days and around 5,000 followers from scratch on our brand new Instagram account. And that was the eureka moment because I was like, we're going all in on direct bookings on Instagram. By that point, Airbnb actually reinstated us. There had been a glitch in their algorithm. But again, it was like the most amazing blessing in disguise because it set the course that the entire trajectory. Fast forward another 12 months, we grew around 100,000 followers that first year on Instagram. The first 50,000 or so were just piggybacking on these giveaways. Then we started creating our own content, which got virality and telling our story that way. But we grew 100,000 followers, 95% occupancy every day of the year, every cabin. And 80% of all those bookings were direct, which again, making 15% extra profit because you're cutting out the OTA fees. You can't be deplatformed. You own the customer email so you can retarget them through campaigns. Because the property was so beautiful, sure enough, we were creating like these lifetime relationships with our guests. So they were coming back. I think I talked to one guest that had come back 3 times in like a 12-month period, bringing friends and family each time just because there was such a strong connection because of all these little details that added up. So it was an amazing journey and it all culminated about 8 months ago. We actually sold the whole property to a private equity group for $1 million a key after being approached by a bunch of other potential buyers. So it's been a whirlwind. All that happened in less than 2.5 years and couldn't be more passionate about experiential hospitality, whether it's micro resorts or individual one-off stays. My generation craves experiences over luxury, over possessions, over a lot of other things. And if you can figure out the cheat code for how to create something that is truly experiential, that is magical for your guests, then there won't even be a competitive playing field. You will be a one-of-one kind of property that is word-of-mouth worthy, that you're able to build a following around, a brand around, that, yeah, then you could leverage to launch a micro resort or something else. But it can change your life. And I'm speaking from personal experience because it's changed mine.
You, first of all, your story is incredible and inspirational. And there are so many things that you just went through that I want to unpack with you on this episode. So I know Annette was like feverishly taking notes over here. I want to start with Isaac. From day one to month 10, you were ready to go, like the lake, all the units, everything was ready to go. Or what was that like?
Yep. We went from a jungled piece of property to literally welcoming our first guests in the door 9.5 months after breaking ground on construction.
That is incredible.
I told you it was a crazy year.
Well, we're like, we bought land. We're like, we bought that many months ago?
We
like,
need to be ashamed of ourselves, Annette Grant.
Well, how much work did you actually do? Like, you labor yourself, Isaac, like your hands hammering a nail or, you know, like, or did you do any of the work at all?
No, I definitely, I mean, I was out there, I think day one, like with chainsaws and we were clearing but because I was also designing the whole property and, you know, managing the lender relationship and managing, basically serving as the general contractor, hiring the subcontractors, firing all that.
You had to fire people?
Count that many
you
nails?
You fired people? We don't have to do that when contracting, do you?
80% of the subcontractors were great and there were some doozies. Oh, it was... Thankfully, with my experience as a general contractor, I was prepared for it, but we had a nightmare. Actually.
I want to bring that up to everybody because I think it doesn't matter how many projects you do or how hands-on you are. you're going to have some uncomfortable conversations with some contractors. And so I just want to offer that to everybody that it never ends. You're always going to have those contractors that don't maybe perform up to your standards, plus up to the standards they said they would.
All part of the process.
I did take a lot of notes here. First of all, you said you were turned down a bunch of times. Can you kind of offer up, what's a bunch? Is that 10? Is it 50? Is 100? How many times are you turned down by the banks?
Okay, by the banks. I thought you were talking about the buyers at first. I approached 3 or 4 banks. So it wasn't dozens, but I invested substantially. Like if I had to do it all over again, I think we got lucky. In other words, that number 3 gave us a shot, because I have a friend who went to 20 banks to do a similar project and got turned down by 20 literal banks, finally found one at like number 21. But yeah, I think I actually got somewhat lucky. I mean, again, just given like I'm 24 years old, I don't have deep financial backing. I did have family members that also helped me co-sign, which was huge, because like the personal guarantee is big for a project like that. But yeah, the moral of the story there is, and again, I'll just use my friend Ben, who you met as well. He's probably more of like the benchmark. 20 banks, no, flat out. So if I had to do it all over again, I'd approach more. I'd refine my pitch a little bit more, because again, I'd never pitched a bank. I'd never done a pro forma for a piece of property. I would like prepare a nice, concise one pager pitch and then actually send it out to like way more banks instead of like, you know, again, it was just like inefficient. I had to like draft up emails and, you know, scab together all these documents that I thought the banks were going to like. And I did that kind of like one at a time, 3 different times. And thankfully it worked in number 3, but there's a more efficient way.
Okay. And then were all seven of the cabins, you said they're 500 square feet?
Yeah. So 5 of the 7 are 2-bedroom. 2 and the other 2 are 1-bedroom, but they're very similar floor plans. But yeah, the bigger ones are around 550 with the loft, and there's a sleeping loft and then a bedroom downstairs. And then the smaller ones are around 475.
Wow.
As you're designing these, Isaac, first of all, did you have time between acquiring the property and hammers down day one of construction? Did you have time to sit down and design all 7? And when you were designing them, how did you know, and what did experiential mean to you when it came to the floor plan and where they were positioned on the property and just like looking at it from a bird's eye view?
Great question. So I mentioned that first time I ever walked on site, and I had that kind of like epiphany moment that this is where we're supposed to build. We were under contract that day, and literally from that moment on, I mean, starting that day, the next 3 days, I was on the property almost like for hours at a time, just by myself, walking every square foot of the 5 acres and just fully immersing and like trying to understand that property as intimately as possible. And of course, like you had to look through the lens of what it could be, because it was hard to see even just because of like all the brush and stuff. But I spent like 10 hours in those first 3 days, just literally fully immersed on the property and understanding, and then beginning to lay out, okay, where could we put units, and literally thinking through from that moment, putting on my like glasses of, okay, I'm the guest. I just stepped out of my cabin. I've got my cup of coffee. I'm walking down towards the water's edge that's going to exist here by faith. And we're going to have a hot tub over here. And we're going to have this tree right here as a screen. Where are we going to position this unit? Are we going to tweak it? Let's tweak it 5 degrees this way, so we're not looking head on into that one, all this kind of stuff. And so it's kind of a balancing act with a micro resort, because you want an element of privacy. And I assume this applies to really any kind of, even if it's just a one-off unit, you want an element of privacy. But in that kind of property, there is like a really cool communal village feel that is also cool. So you got to find like, how can we screen each unit with trees and with views to where every cabin is framing like a really beautiful view on the property, and every window too. Like you got windows on all sides, but the front view, they're all glass, if you look it up, is kind of like that's the main shoot through moment. And so even at the time, I didn't have the experience that I have now as far as Instagram, but I would call it like a shoot through moment. So you're walking in, and now like we create a bunch of content off of this, but we just got lucky the first time. It's perfect because like you can film as you walk in the door, walking through the space. There's like, it's a really efficient layout. There's like a kitchen on the first hallway wall. So we turned a hallway into like a small kitchenette, which is perfect because a lot of people bring food to cook while they're there. That's part of the experience. But then as you're walking through the living space, It's all about this massive view, and it's literally framed like a picture, this perfect view that is, again, like the inside, the outside, all coming together to create this magical moment for people. That's the most important moment that you have on the whole place. And each cabin has their own unique magical view like that. And so, yeah, I mean, I literally screenshotted a Google image of the property, satellite image, and then just started playing. I used this app called Procreate with my iPad Pros, where you can do like layers. It's super simple, though. You don't need to have a bunch of technical knowledge. And just started sketching like different site plans with the roadways, with the trails. And it was like really fun, again, over like a week's time. And then like asked different friends and family, hey, if you were staying here, would you think this is too close? And got other people's perspective, but mainly relied on my gut as far as like, what would I want? I want to design a property that I would love to be at. And so that's how it went. And then for the actual unit designs, there's a company called Den Outdoors that I had come across that has some really great designs. They sell plans, building plans. And I fell in love with like two different designs. And I was like, well, maybe I could buy these plans and like merge the floor plan from this one with the elevations from that one. And then, so that's sure enough what I did. I spent like $3,000, bought the two plans, and then hired somebody on Fiverr for like $300 to redraw everything. And then I kind of like also incorporated the spiral staircase in the middle and some other small tweaks. And then, yeah, voila, we had our building plans like a few days later, from thanks to this freelancer from Fiverr. We ended up mirroring a few of them. But in general, they're very, very similar. So like there's a lot of scale economies. Of course, we built them all at the same time too, just in terms of like furnishings. Okay, great. We went with like these really cool, like all the couches and all the love seats and the accent chair. We chose the same manufacturer, but just customized the colors for each individual unit. Or like the art, I found on Etsy, like this really great pencil artist who did bird drawings. And so I just got like 50 different of these bird drawings, same frame, same look, but different art. And that's how we differentiated a lot of the interiors from each other, in addition to the naming of the cabins, which was also, you know, according to where they were, like Shadow Bend or Lakeside North or White Rock or Cedar Brook, where they were on the property.
Okay, so many questions. You use the words micro, experiential, and resort. So when you have these seven experiential units that you've poured your heart and soul and thought about the angles at which they're facing and how the guests are going to check into it and when they go to get their cup of coffee, what their view is, how did you decide on a micro resort how you wouldn't sacrifice experience while still having them be relatively, how close are they? And will they hear each other when they're outside enjoying family time? And how much did that play into your overall site plan and design?
Good question. A lot of people probably would have taken that same piece of property and done about twice to three times the number of units just because it's 5 acres. And I see a lot of people cutting, whether it's that corner or any other number of corners. They may seem small, like small decisions in order to maximize profit, maximize building efficiency, whatever, but it would have made like a night and day difference in terms of the overall result. I somehow had this ability the entire time to sort of envision that final guest experience from the first moment I walked on. And I think that kind of is a superpower. And I don't think it's that rare. I think a lot of people can cultivate this, like be an intentional observer. And this applies to all kinds of design. And that's how you build great taste, but also the ability to like envision what's not there. So I was able to see like the entire time, feel exactly where we were trying to get to. So though we had a very bare bones like design plan to start with, because I was there every single day making decisions on a granular level, we didn't need an architect. We didn't need, you know, $100,000+ of like pre-construction work done just to get the project off the ground. But it meant that, and it also allowed us to be very nimble because as we went, we were able to like adjust the plan because I didn't have it all figured out. I just had that mental image of like, this is the design Bible of what I want the guests to feel. And I think it's actually helpful, like a brand canvas or a design Bible, you could storyboard out the experience. Like, okay, what are the experiential aspects? Are we going to have kayaking or trails? Are we going to have, you know, a wood barrel sauna? Are we going to have what kind of like, even like on the digital footprint, what kind of typography and branding and signage are we going to have on the property? What kind of building units are we going to have? What are the colors? And like lay all that stuff out and then figure out something very concise, like 3 or 4 or 5 main elements. Like for Live Oak Lake, that's Scandinavian design, live oak trees and water, and sort of like a Pacific Northwest vibe. White oak finishes throughout. And like maybe right about there, let's just cap it for now. Okay, yes, there's going to be layers of more details. But having that mental image, and it's easier to do this visually, so like Pinterest is really helpful for this. I created all kinds of boards and stuff. As we went, that dictated, that sort of like design Bible dictated every decision, all the way down to like what silverware is going to be in the drawers. Because it was like all pointing back to that cohesive mental model. And so as we went, in terms of like the layout, that was very much in my mind. I wanted, again, one of the cabins, like even is much more private. It's more in the trees. So it's more geared towards those that are just seeking privacy. But most of them, like especially at night, I could picture these light reflections, which we did. So like there's really cool lighting at each of the cabins. And then at, 30 minutes before sunset, all the lights turn on, which through a smart home automation, and they're on until 10 p.m. And so you get these really cool reflections dancing in the water. That helps create like that communal vibe. Then we did a commons area. So everyone could come together, and we didn't even consciously think this stuff through, but like, I feel like I got really lucky. We're in the early innings of also like a huge trend towards small group experiences, not just small individual experiences, but like micro weddings, small family reunions, small corporate startup retreats. And having this outdoor space with like grilling area and, like patio seating and a dock. So it was like lakeside access for everyone. And all of this was this perfect little hub. We spent like 30,000-40,000. Most of it was in the landscaping in that area to create this little oasis, this little vibe. Like the whole property's an oasis, but then this commons area is like an oasis within an oasis. And it's a place that just people gravitate towards. And so sure enough, having that space allowed us all the more to be able to host these small events. So we had a lot of like property buyouts. And if I had to do it all over, I would have even put more emphasis on that space because I didn't realize how much hunger there would be for these small group events. But to answer the question, there's screening, there's natural screening through trees and bushes and shrubs for each cabin. There's also roller shades on every window. So there's maximum privacy if you like at night and such. But again, like you have to find that perfect balance between seclusion, immersion in nature, and feeling like you're part of a village. And I think we were able to achieve it with that place.
Your common area and these micro like retreats, micro weddings, when you say you sell out the property, is that at a premium when you're doing that? Are you increasing the nightly rate on each of the units? Was that even like a plan of yours? And, was pricing coming into play when you're running your numbers and when you're looking at these details? How early did you start thinking about your nightly rate?
Yeah, I mean, I penciled out some numbers that in order to get the bank loan ended up being extremely conservative. And it was sort of like, I didn't even use AirDNA. I kind of based it off of, well, there's that. That's like, this is like the nicest unit in the area, which is a few miles down the road. I bet we could kind of be 10% above that. And, we ended up being three or four times that because, again, we were creating an entirely new, it was not a commodity to be compared to others. So we underwrote very conservatively. And we also designed, this is like an important note, each cabin to have closet space in each bedroom and a washer and dryer and a small kitchenette. This is all great for the overnight guests, but it's also a fallback that in our minds, like if this whole thing doesn't work, if this whole, tourism play is not going to work here and our friends are all right that we're oversaturated, this could be rented out as a long-term unit and people would like totally be cool staying here. And it wouldn't be like, one of those terrible apartments where you can't do your laundry and you can't cook anything and all that. So that extra 10 to 15% of expense and effort that we put into creating each space to be that enabled us to have that plan B, but also those ended up being really important amenities for the guests because another trend that we saw, and this is started post-COVID, is in full force today, is people are taking these 2 or 3 or 4 day staycations. So like market and positioning in the market is really, really important too, even geographically, because most of our guests, like 98% of our guests are coming from Dallas-Fort Worth or Austin or San Antonio. Those are all cities within the Texas Triangle, which we're smack dab in the middle of. They're within 1 hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours and 15 minutes from us. Perfect drivable distance. And they're all coming for like these 2 or 3 day retreats.
So that the nightly rate you had planned ahead, but these micro weddings, these startup retreats, was that even in your thought process? And how did you price those out? Because Sarah and I are very interested in that for our resort. How are you doing these sellouts, pricing them?
Yeah. So we created that common space, but again, we weren't even thinking in terms of these events. We never actually ended up charging like an event fee. What we did is we did a 10% premium on the buyout because you sacrifice a little bit on your calendar because you have a hard stop on both ends. And so that's the one thing you got to be aware of. On the positive side, of course, you're hitting 100% occupancy, but we found like 10% as a premium was a good threshold. And then, of course, you couldn't actually buy it out unless all units were available. Through our property management software, HostAway, we were able to do basically a parent listing. And so it automatically knew whenever we had availability across all the sublistings, and then that was an opening. And then with our pricing integration software, Wheelhouse, we were able to set that differential. And then, yeah, so most of the time, you know, groups were buying out probably 3 to 6 months in advance just to try to find an opening for everything. One thing that we did play around with was allowing some of those events with like a majority, say 3 or 4 or 5 cabins. And that is a little bit of a mixed bag because the commons area became such a key part of the overarching experience that it didn't feel fair to the other guests if that was being hogged by, you know, the group. So we experimented with it, and you can try it, but I never felt perfectly right about it. And I think it just kind of compromised the other guests' experience. Some of them didn't care, but going forward, especially for that size of property with 7 units, that's not that heavy of a lift, especially for a lot of like these, you know, companies that are booking a retreat. And so we just made them do the full buyout.
Right. So what I'm hearing is even if they ask for 4 or 5, you're like, no, if you want to buy out, it has to be the full resort now.
At that size.
Yeah.
I think if you go a little bigger, then it would be okay to start compromising on that, especially again, given the layout too. Like, I think it's possible to do some units, depending on the property you're working with, that are closer to that, that could be their own little deal and then have other stuff separate.
Was your common area, did you have that planned at the very beginning of thinking about the resort?
Yes. We didn't have the full experience what it became, like all the programming. I say programming, it's all like do it yourself, but as far as like all the amenities. But one thing we realized early on was that the property was not going to appeal only to couples, which are like a target demographic of a lot of unique stays today, like romantic couples getaways. We knew there were a lot of small families that would love to come and experience this and bring their kids. So in order to cater to them, we did like a little play area at the commons area, which was great. And the price point, you know, some people might wonder, well, are you going to introduce an unwanted element, which I just think is really wrong. And as a parent myself, like by bringing in children, it's not necessarily like an unwanted element. It's more of like, how can romantic couples getaways coexist with more of like a family environment? And with a property that small and the price point we were at and the branding and the story we were telling, we attracted the right guests. Yes, there were a few exceptions, like where we had somebody trying to do a party, and, you know, a couple of instances like that. But by and large, we just got the right guests by telling the right story and by pricing at the level that we did. But so we had like a play area, and then we ended up adding this container pool. It's a shipping container turned into a swimming pool with a big window cut in the side. That was a really cool feature. It dovetailed like with the overall aesthetic. It's black, like metal, but it also is what I call like an Instagrammable moment, which again, like is another way to think about designing the property and all these little details. So every trail through the woods, every cabin and the view that it's framing, you know, the front entryway, especially the front entryway, because that's a first impression, the container pool at the commons area, these are all opportunities, like storytelling gold. They're opportunities for your guests to create content around and promote on their own, let alone the content you're going to create. And word of mouth is the most valuable marketing channel there's ever been and will ever be. And we knew that, but social media and influencers and guests creating their own content, but social media in general is like the perfect vehicle to augment word of mouth. So sure enough, like all of our guests go there and they create, you know, they take videos or selfies or whatever at these key places. And that's what creates like this FOMO with their friends, and they bring them back and they bring their family. And it just creates this incredible snowball of demand. And if you keep your overall key count low enough, and I like to think that's between 10 and 12 units, though that totally depends on the property type, what your concept is, what your market is. If you keep that low enough, you're never, ever going to struggle with like filling all of your units, just because, yes, you can build a brand around this incredible experience and you can always sell out 7 units. It's just, that's what we found, at least. If you're in the right market too, and that's a great feeling to hit like 90, 95% occupancy. Some of that is the group stays, and that's part of the appeal of our property. It can cater to such a wide spectrum of guests.
So you didn't build any larger units, meaning more than 2 bedrooms, right? There were no 3, 4, 5 bedrooms. And it sounds like you still attract, because you could sell all 7 of the micro units and have the common space for them to get together, that you really didn't alienate the bigger families or the family reunions by doing the smaller units. Was that your thought all along? Or what was the reason why you didn't build like one big lodge to like, I don't know, rule them all?
It's not a bad idea. If I had to do it again, I probably would have. That's the concept that worked for this property. So like, it's really helpful to know the principles of what works. And then there's so much customization depending on the property type and the market you're in and the customer avatar you're catering to. But no, that's a very fair point. And us, especially like maybe not that particular property, because what we had just works. Like we didn't need bigger units. But on another property, especially if I had a little bit more space, because I care a lot about density and not getting too, not creating units that are too big for the actual real estate they're on. And that has to do with the trees, the topography, the views, if there's water, et cetera. But on the next one, I would definitely consider doing like a 3-bedroom. I don't know that you'd even need a 4-bedroom. At a certain point, again, you start encouraging the wrong kind of like parties and such, which we didn't want. But a lot of families even that like had more than, you know, whatever, more than 2 or 3 kids, they'd buy 2 or 3 cabins out. And then they would just like, their older kids would be in one cabin, which they absolutely loved. And the parents would be in this cabin over here and et cetera, et cetera.
No, that makes perfect sense. And I agree with you. The way it was supposed to be is the way, obviously, the way you did it. We heard a little tip from you at IMN that we wanted to dig in here on the podcast so that everyone could benefit from this piece of education from you. You mentioned how important to experiential stays is the landscaping, and how, and I forget the exact way you said it, but it was brilliant. It like really clicked for me about how much landscape actually appreciates and helps with the value of your property, but also that experience with the guests. Can you dig into landscaping a bit for us?
Yeah. So I like to say landscaping is the highest ROI dollars you're going to spend on your project. So if you're spending $1 on your unit type that it's really cool and unique and the architecture is great, maybe you're going to, you know, you're going to see a $1 increase in value, a 2x ROI. If you're spending $1 on landscaping, this is of course just a general rule of thumb, but I like to think of that as at least a 5x ROI. So it's like much more valuable, the money that you're spending. That doesn't mean, obviously, you can't just dump all your money into the landscape because you need a cool unit. But again, it's all about creating a vibe. And to me, that's like the properties I'm the most passionate about. Not to say it can't work in more of an urban setting, because even there, you can like invest heavily in landscaping and create like a little oasis. But it's all about creating like small enough, a sense of enclosure. Like each unit needs to have some cool indoor space and some cool outdoor space. Maybe they even flow seamlessly together with like a glass set of doors. But at Live Oak, that ended up looking like, I'll take one unit, Lakeside North. It's positioned about 30 feet from the water up on a little knoll. And you open those front glass doors. There's a small, like a 6-foot apron porch on the front of the unit with like a couple chairs and a smokeless fire pit. And so that's great. That's like a perfect place to sit and drink your coffee. But then we have like these stepping stones that are nestled into the landscape as you're kind of walking down this little hill. And there's like even these 2 boulders we positioned with a little stair step that you actually take steps down, and the path winds slowly and you can walk down to your own little point at the water's edge underneath this huge cottonwood tree. And like there's the water flowing, there's like the rustling leaves of the tree, there's looking back at your front, the front of your cabin with your fire, whatever. There's a hammock next to the cabin in the trees. The whole setting is like magical, but those little moments, even like of that little micro journey down to the water's edge, are huge, because again, it's like this shoot through Instagrammable moment. And what you're referring to, I think that I said, is most buildings, like from a tax perspective, the IRS knows this, from a building perspective, buildings depreciate. So the day you build them is like, at least from a maintenance standpoint, it doesn't mean the real estate won't appreciate, but the building itself, the structure, that's the most valuable it'll ever be. From that day on, it's just going to start slowly depreciating, because that's entropy. Landscapes are exactly the opposite. So from the day you plant a tree, that's the least valuable it's going to be. Going infinitely into the future, at least for the life of that tree, it's going to get more and more valuable as it grows up, as it matures. And so you take that, you spread that out on every component of the landscaping, the grass. You know, when you first put down sod, it looks a little tacky. It looks like, okay, there's like an awkward edge over there, and you can kind of see the squares here. Give it 6 months, it's going to be beautiful. It's going to start to like fill in and be a mat. You take ivies on a wall, you take trees, you take bushes, and you take flowers. You name it, all of it, whether it's like the hardscaping pieces or the plantings and or the water feature, like over time, even that starts to kind of even, well, depending on what it is, like get a patina, or the water will stabilize and you won't have algae problems, and you have a much more valuable landscape a year down the road. So I love, and that's part of the reason you get such a higher ROI on the landscaping. But again, the most important part is that is creating that magical vibe and that feeling that you're after for your guests. So even a fairly boring property, like I've got a friend who has a house in a cool location, but the house isn't anything spectacular. It's great. It does the job. But we were brainstorming the other day and I was like, hey, you've got a perfect opportunity to create like this small meditation space right outside. And you could do a little bird bath. You could plant these trees here and here. You could do some bushes here. You could do like a little gravel pad. You could do a couple lights overhead, like even some outdoor pendant lights that would help create this vibe. You're getting sound in the water. You're attracting birds. You could even do like a little fountain if you wanted. You're creating a sense of even privacy because you can kind of see some of the neighbors. You could do a little lattice wall right here. Again, kind of create this outdoor sense of enclosure. And I could just picture, and then sure enough, now he's building it, like towards sunset at blue hour, the light starting to glow, this spectacular little spot full of vibe. And that has become kind of like the centerpiece of his property now. And so he can use that on all of his marketing. The guests love it. It's kind of opened up this whole opportunity where like he's catering to wellness-oriented guests a lot. And so this is a perfect meditation space for that. Again, it's maybe not even like proportionately a lot less money than it takes to actually invest in the structures, but it's kind of the 80-20 rule. You spend 20% of the money there instead of 5%, you're going to see an 80% increase in the property value, in the guest satisfaction, in the overall experience and the marketability of it through especially like an Instagram or other video channel than if you didn't have it.
I want all of our listeners, because I'm even thinking about one of our properties right now, like just what can you do on the exterior, that is with either when the guest walks up to your home or when the guest goes out on your back patio, there is stuff that you could make a small investment in today that could pay dividends moving forward. I want to ask, if you had to do it all over again operationally, what is something that was like a kink in the set? Like, I don't know where you were doing laundry. Like, what is something that if you had to build these 7 units again, you would absolutely, no brainer, you would change?
Operationally, I honestly can't think of anything. Yes, there was learning. We thankfully were forethinking enough to do a laundry facility that ended up being super straightforward. This is like a pro tip. If you have a micro resort, we bought a prefab shed for $8,000, set it on pads, then spent another $6,000 like bringing utilities to it and finishing it out, and then built like 2x4 and plywood sturdy shelving. Like, you need 2 or 3x the space that you think you do for all of your overstock, but fill the, you know, the walls with shelving, and then invested in a Speed Queen and Unimac washer and dryer. Highly recommend, don't go and buy like residential grade, because just the level of volume that you have, yes, it's 10x the cost. You know, our washing machine is $15,000, more than 10x the cost of a residential, but that thing will be good to go with zero serviceability issues for 10 years at least. And we only need one washer, extractor, and one dryer. So all in, we spent like $30,000 on that. But that laundry facility is huge because it also enabled the cleaners to stay right on site. And that's hugely attractive to them versus having to leave and such. You can attract better cleaners.
Did they have a golf cart or would they just walk back and forth?
We paved everything. So okay. They drove.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. And then we hid the laundry facility like in the trees, kind of in the back corner. So you never see it from the rest of the units. But yeah, always make sure you have like 2 or 3x overs. If I had to do anything different, I guess I'd get a bigger shed because we had so much. Like, it's operationally an intensive business. And so you need to make sure you have room. I think one thing from a design perspective, two things actually. One, I should have done at least one of the cabins ADA accessible. I didn't. And it would have not been that big of a deal. It's just I totally skipped my mind. Second thing is I should have expanded the floor plan like 6 inches on one side, and I could have squeezed in a king bed versus a queen bed in the upstairs loft. That is huge. It ended up being fine for us just because there was so much else to make up for it. But so many guests want a king bed. I don't know if it's just a Texas thing, but
no, it's everywhere.
That's a good pro tip. Like, just get the king.
We advise someone to make the closet smaller so that you can fit a king bed, like, because it was the only bed in the property. Yep. And it was geared towards couple. And it's like, you have to, the king beds are where it's at, man.
I would totally agree.
Next question, Isaac, you are speaking so passionately and so like, I'm fired up, but you sold this place. It's gone. It's no longer yours, right? Like, the keys are gone.
How, it's bittersweet. Yep.
Yeah. Like, what, did you always have intentions to sell? How did this come about? And why were you so ready to just like, you know, let it go so quickly? Actually, pretty quickly.
Yeah. Relatively pretty quickly, but we weren't, it was tough. Like, it was a hard decision. I think, you know, this may sound counterintuitive, but the best transaction in terms of selling, in terms of like getting your value out, like, you want to be in a position where you're never forced to sell. And we were not at all forced to sell. It made so much sense to keep it. And I think it would have been a good decision to keep it. I think it was an even better decision at that particular moment with that buyer to sell it. Everything in this world in terms of material things should have a price tag, is my opinion. And we had received several offers for like, you know, $4 to $5 million for the whole place. It cost us 2.3 to build. And those were tempting, but they just didn't quite do it for us. It was like, we're cash flowing incredibly. Everything has gone perfect. And yet, even in spite of that, it almost felt like, okay, we've received so much press. We've grown our following so quickly. We've hit such crazy occupancy numbers. Maybe these are all like the right indicators. And then mixed with a bigger market uncertainty of interest rates have gone crazy, which is like just reduced the appetite to buy anything in terms of real estate. It was like this perfect stars aligning moment. And we actually were under contract to sell it for $6.5 million. And then the day before we were supposed to close, that group fell through. And that was a great learning experience. We didn't have nearly enough earnest money. They didn't have nearly enough earnest money down. So like, I learned a bunch through that. And then like 3 days after we backed out, we got this other LOI for $7 million for the whole place. So like $500,000 more. And so we got under contract with them. Again, it was like, you know, there's a saying, birds fly, fish swim, and deals fall through. And that literally was happening. Like, the entire thing, again, pretty much completely fell through. And this time we had a lot more earnest money at stake we could have walked away with, but the offer just felt so good. And the buyers also seemed like the right buyers. And so we went ahead and gave them more time. Sure enough, they were able to pull through and close just a lot later than expected. But it was an emotionally turbulent decision and like season, because it's like your baby. Like, when you've invested that level of passion and time and energy and all of that into it, it literally kind of, well, having a child,
really not that much time though. Let's celebrate that. Like,
true, but if you added up all the hours,
right. Like, but yeah, but overall, like, most people selling something, that if you look at their timelines, it's could be much right. long, much
well,
longer.
That's the thing.
Than that.
I was 26 years old. I'm like, okay, I could theoretically go with all the lessons learned here and redo it all and mm-hmm. do it better, because I learned so much through the whole process. And so ultimately, yeah, I was like, it just felt like it was the right time and the right buyer.
Was it for sale though? Was it on the market, or were you low key on the sale, or were people coming to you? Like, how did that go down? Because you said you had multiple offers. So
yeah, it was some of both. Like, just starting to tell the story and be transparent about it, like more from the behind the scenes perspective, attracted a lot of investors and potential buyers. But then we're like, well, if we're gonna, you know, be dealing with a bunch of tire kickers and just like, because of course there's some of that too, we may as well like list this with an agent who can kind of handle all of that for us and go through the work of like figuring out and presenting exactly what we have. And so we ended up listing it with a broker, but we just listed at what we thought was like a ridiculously high number relative to, you know, what we had put into it and such. And we're like, okay, this will filter out 99% of the riffraff that we don't want. But if there's somebody who's willing to pay this, then hey, we'll consider it. And sure enough, it ended up that there were.
Are there any other real estate projects on your horizon?
You know, I've looked at like several recently and have some ideas for the next. I mean, I have a lot of ideas actually for the next resort, but it's such an interesting time. And I think this is somewhat regional. It's the case everywhere, but each region is going to be different. Basically, the local market, and I've had opportunities presented for, like, you know, all over the country, the same concept from other investors, from other real estate owners and such. I don't want to do anything just anywhere because I care a lot about the quality of life that I currently live, and I want something hyper-local if I'm going to do it. But in this, though, I think there's a ton of other markets and opportunities. That's why I'm so passionate, because I think other people should capitalize on that, like you guys are. This particular market that we're in, the volume has like, the real estate volume has like come to a, well, now it's starting to pick back up, but it pretty much came to a halt like in late 2023 because interest rates have gone really high, but property is not selling. Like, sellers are not budging on their prices. And so, especially in this market, we saw post COVID such a high ramp up in prices. We went from like, you know, 5 to 10,000 an acre being normal to 40 to 50,000 an acre. So it's like this incredible increase. And I think we went a little too fast, except that sellers just aren't motivated to sell. So I don't really feel like buying in a property at 40,000 plus an acre right now when interest rates are so high. And so like, that's naturally going to limit the potential as far as what you can build. So I'm looking for the right opportunity, looking for the right deal. I could do a lot of things, but right now I get a ton of energy just from helping others. And I'm probably involved in 20 to 30 other micro resort projects and unique stay projects throughout the country in a consulting capacity.
That's incredible. Is there a question that we did not ask you, Isaac, about micro resorts and sharing it with our listeners that you want to make sure you share with them today before we ask you where they can find out more about you?
This might sound cheesy, but I really believe this with all my heart. You don't need hospitality or hotel or STR experience. You don't need generational wealth to do a project like this. You need a dream. You need a burning desire and passion to create this magical experience that you just believe with your heart and your head that other people cannot convince you away from. And if you have that passion and you have that dream, and I suggest you write it down, even if you have like the beginnings of that, because writing it will help clarify your thinking and crystallize that into a conviction. If you have that, that is literally viral, the dream itself. And if you start telling your story, which is what I say is step one, before you even look for land, before you have money figured out and you use social media, who knows, maybe that's actually how your investors will come. That's how lenders will come. That's where contractors and designers and all the partners that you need and ultimately your guests are going to come. And I have friends who are doing this right now. I have a friend named Harrison Hyde. You should check him out on Instagram if you don't follow him already. He's got 165,000 followers and he hasn't even finished raising the money for his micro resort concept. He's in the UK, but he's just a master storyteller and he has a dream and people believe in it. And he believes in it more than they even do. And so start with a dream and then tell that story and don't be afraid to look stupid or make mistakes doing it publicly. Just put yourself out there. And I literally believe the universe will rearrange to somebody whose like will is set on creating this kind of an experience for other people. And so that if there's one thing I can leave people with, it's you've got to believe in the dream. You got to believe in yourself. And I know it sounds like, you know, pie in the sky, but I really believe that's the most important thing here. That's what saw me through. Yes, I had an incredible family. I had friends. I had $20,000 of savings. But at the end of the day, everything aligned to that passion that you pointed out. And I just feel like it makes me so excited because I feel like that's within everyone's reach. And maybe you're not the most design-oriented person, or maybe you're not the visionary. Maybe you can partner with someone that is, and you just believe that the idea is good. That's equally valuable. But everyone can create properties like this, even if it's a single unit, a one-of-a-kind, viral kind of destination property. So that's the one piece of advice I would leave with everyone.
That's an incredible and important message, Isaac. If people wanted to learn more about you, if they wanted to work with you, how can they get a hold of you? Where do they follow you?
I just built a website, isaacjfrench.com, I-S-A-A-C, that is. And you can subscribe to my newsletter there, which I spend like 2 hours writing each week to give away value for free on, you know, breaking down my learnings and the step-by-step to create a property like this. And you can also follow me on Instagram or X at isaacfrench_.
Perfect. Well, we cannot wait to share your story with our community because they're going to eat this up. He's so good. All right. With that, I am Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are.
Thanks for visiting. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for additional information about today's episode. And please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week.
Want to know our best kept hosting secrets?
They're all inside our STR must-haves master list, our secret weapon that continues to transform ordinary host into extraordinary host.
The must-haves master list is a checklist that we've been perfecting for over 12 years.
Picture this: your guest checks in to your short-term rental and they're instantly wowed by the thoughtful touches and impeccable amenities. Why? Because you've got the TFB must-have master list by your side.
This checklist has all the insider secrets that even the best host didn't know they were missing.
We challenge you to take the checklist into your property today. See how many items you can mark off of this list. You didn't get them all? No worries. This is your chance to level up. So go to hostchecklist.com and grab your free copy. That's hostchecklist.com to download our coveted checklist today.